Economic sanctions are squeezing Iran, says President Obama. We're here to ask what the sanctions are aimed at achieving and where the US-Iran standoff is headed. You're watching another edition of News Analysis.
Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei addressing large crowds of people in the northeastern Iranian city of Mashhad. Like each year, Ayatollah Khamenei covers main issues of the day on the first day of Nowruz. This time, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution devoted some portions of his speech to U.S. and Israeli threats. Ayatollah Khamenei said Iran does not seek nuclear weapons and warned the country will strike back with full force if attacked by the enemies.
البته من همینجا بگم ما سلاح اتمی نداریم سلاح اتمی هم نخواهیم ساخت اما در مقابل تهاجم دشمنان چه آمریکا و چه رژیم صهیونیستی برای دفاع از خودمان در همون سطحی که دشمن حمله کند به اونا حمله خواهیم کرد
Ayatollah Khamenei strongly criticized the U.S. and its allies for their enmity toward Iran. He said Iran's adversaries' concerns about the country's nuclear energy program or other issues are all false excuses. The main reason for their animosity toward Iran is oil.
اگر در کشور ثروتمند ایران که قله ثروت نفت و گاز متعلق به اوست نظامی بر سر کار باشد که غیرتمندانه از این ثروت ملی حراست کند اجازه چپاول ندهد اجازه تطاول ندهد تسلیم سیاست‌های دشمنان نباشد خب با این نظام دشمنی خواهند کرد دشمنی با ایران اسلامی به این خاطره
Ayatollah Khamenei reminded the fact that the West's energy reserves will diminish within several years, something the Western governments are trying to hide from their nations. Many in Western countries, including officials in the international financial organizations, also believe that Western economies cannot afford an energy crisis as they are already reeling from their worst economic downturn in decades.
Well, joining me now live from Madison is American philosopher Mr. James Fetzer, with us live from London, historian and political commentator Peter Rushton, and also with us via Skype from Idaho is Mr. Mark Glenn with the Crescent and Cross Solidarity Movement. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. I'd like to put our first question to our guest in London, Mr. Rushton. Iran has said that it's experienced a 20% economic growth from 2010 to 2011, but are the sanctions still affecting the country?
Well, sanctions clearly are not going to have a positive effect on a country's economy. They're intended to be a form of aggression against Iran. They're intended to undermine the confidence of the Iranian people and the Iranian government. So far, though, what seems to have happened is that because of the overall world situation, both the Iranian people and their leaders are able to look at the fuller context and to say, well, if the West goes further down this sanctions road, the people who will suffer most, however much it causes problems within Iran, the people who will suffer most will be people within the globe, right across the global economy. And people in the West who are already under pressure because of the problems with energy reserves, problems that will be worse this time than in the energy crisis of the 1970s, because, of course, this time, in 2012, we're in a position where there are other countries developing in economies around the world who are all needing oil as well. So you'd have enormous demand for oil from those countries, exacerbating the problems of any oil shortage following from a crisis that was contributed to by sanctions. So those Western economies that are part of what one would call, what I would call, the axis of aggression, because President George Bush talked about the axis of evil at one time, we can see now in the world an axis of aggression between Washington and Tel Aviv, with various offshoots at times here in London and in Paris.
Right,
that
Russian,
axis of aggression and its allies have their own problems.
You just referred there to the fact that sanctions by these countries are going to affect the economies of these countries themselves. I'd just like to move ahead with that question to our guest, Mr. Fetzer, in Madison. Now, Mr. Fetzer, we had breaking news right now, the US coming out exempting 11 nations, including European Union members and Japan, of new oil sanctions on Iran. Would you view this as a kind of retreat from the United States? And is this saying that this was, from the beginning, an irrational decision?
Well, the situation really does revolve about oil, but in a slightly different fashion than Ayatollah Khomeini described. It is because Iran, like Iraq and Libya before it, has been willing to trade for oil in currencies other than the dollar. It's abandoning the petrodollar and moving to a bourse that allows transactions in international currencies that has brought about this severe response from the United States. President Obama has claimed that he instructed Benjamin Netanyahu that the United States would not support an attack on Iran. But Netanyahu has been quoted in Haaretz, among other sources, as saying that Obama was going to privately support Israel even while publicly condemning it. On the front page of the New York Times today was a report that war games conducted by the Pentagon have shown that any attack on Iran by Israel would lead to a wider regional war and inevitably draw in the United States. This is not news. The Pentagon conducts war games all the time. Everyone has known this to be the case for a long, long time. But its publication on the front page of the New York Times is significant because it means that the Pentagon and the president are actually allowing the people to know that if there is an attack on Iran, that the United States will be engaged in one more war, one more act of aggression that is going to have immeasurable consequences, where a million deaths of Iranians outright have been predicted and another 35 million premature deaths as the cloud of contamination spreads across Afghanistan, Pakistan, and India.
Right. When we are looking at the situation that the U.S. is currently engaged in regarding military action, Mark Glenn in Idaho, I'd like to put this question to you. Do you think that the U.S. is actually looking at a military attack as an option here in the case of Iran, or is it just sticking to that economic pressure as President Obama has publicly announced?
Well, it's virtually impossible for us to get a 100% accurate bead on what Washington is planning to do at any given moment. But I tend to agree with Dr. Fetzer's assessment on this, which is that the Pentagon and more importantly the White House, they understand that the man simply is not there. The United States cannot get involved in another theater of war, especially with a country as large as Iran. And so I think that this alone explains why Washington has been dragging its feet now for a good 6 or 7 years with regards to this Israeli-demanded attack upon Iran. So I think that we're in a very dangerous position here because the wild card in all of this, of course, is Israel. Israel has invested a huge amount of resources in terms of propaganda, in terms of money, just the political ramifications that would be the fallout of the United States not attacking Iran could be absolutely devastating for Israel, who has to maintain this tough guy image on the world scene with regards to her control over Washington, D.C. So the dangerous situation that we're all facing here is, what is Israel going to do in order to push the United States into this conflict with Iran? Is she going to attack another ship the way that she did in 1967 with the USS Liberty? Is she going to is she going to assassinate the American president like one of her writers suggested be done just a few months ago?
Right.
And then, of course, blame this on Iran. I mean, that's the wild card in the whole thing that makes the situation so unpredictable.
Peter Rushton, looking at the excuses that may be brought for any kind of military action or even increased political and economic pressure on Iran. One case, of course, is the nuclear issue. Other cases could include human rights situation that have been brought up. What the leader was saying today was that these are not the reasons behind the United States' enmity towards Iran. We have, for instance, in the nuclear case, Iran as an NPT member state does have the right, basically, to enrich uranium for peaceful purposes, and it is being supervised by the IAEA. So would you agree with this analysis that this is not about actually the nuclear issue or human rights issues or similar cases?
Yes, and I think there was important evidence supporting the Iranian leader's interpretation. Over the last 2 days, there's been important evidence appearing in, of all places, the New York Times, where various U.S. intelligence officers themselves, speaking off the record to the New York Times, have stated that there simply isn't a case for attacking Iran based on the nuclear issue, that the evidence just doesn't stack up. Now, it seems clear to me that within the Washington bureaucracy, there are once again people, the famous neocon lobby that's operated there over the decades, the pro-Zionist lobby that's operated there since even before the State of Israel was created, but that there are also increasing numbers of people who are sick and tired and very worried about the intelligence process, the diplomatic process, being abused by that lobby, and the political, the ideologically driven abuse of the intelligence process, driving a country further towards a military conflict that the US simply cannot afford. It seems to me that when you see stories like that appearing in the New York Times, quoting, of course, anonymously, people within the intelligence bureaucracy there who fear for their jobs if they were to speak openly, that you have a position where there is a serious conflict going on within Washington between the pragmatists, if you like, and the ideologically driven, hardline, pro-Zionist elements. And in an election year, of course, that gets even more complicated still, because what's happened over the years, because of the huge amounts of money that an American election, this supposed great democracy in America, is an engine that requires a lot of money pumping into it for that political engine to take over. And that's a situation where the Zionist lobby has always, of course, been very, very strong. That complicates the position enormously in an election year in
America. I'd just like to get Professor Fetzer's view on this as well. Professor, when we are looking at what is causing that enmity between the United States and Iran, I'd like to have your view on this question. Let's look at Iran as the effect that it has in the region. It's one of course, the leader was saying today that when we put the gas and oil reserves of Iran together, Iran becomes the biggest, actually, source of energy supplies in the world. And this gives Iran a very strategic position in the world. And he was mentioning issues like Iran being an independent decision maker, Iran not bowing to U.S. pressure on especially the issue of energy. So what's your view on that?
Well, I see a new international power structure emerging in relationships between Iran, China, and Russia. I am astounded at the absence of discussion of the violations of international law that would be entailed by a strike against Iran, which would be contravene the Hague Convention of 1899, the Kellogg-Briand Peace Treaty of 1928, and even the United Nations Charter, all of which obligate signer nations such as the United States to the peaceful negotiation of differences between these nations, none of which justify a first strike, especially on a country that hasn't attacked anyone for more than 300 years. I must say there are disturbing signs that America is turning itself into an increasingly militaristic and fascist state. The latest reports have the Department of Homeland Security ordering 450 million rounds of 40 caliber ammunition and another 175 million rounds of 223 ammunition. When you combine this with the development of internment facilities and the recruitment of those personnel required to maintain them, the shutting down of the voices that are critical of the government, from Judge Napolitano on the Fox News Network to Jesse Ventura's conspiracy theory program, I am afraid that the future of the United States is looking very, very grim. Mm.
And that brings me to the next question, Mark Glenn. Is the United States, do you agree, facing a weaker situation now, looking at the region, the issue of energy supplies? We know that, according to some reports, the United States and the European Union members, they are not going to have enough energy supplies to supply themselves with. They'll be dependent on energy supplies in the region. And with looking at the Arab Spring influencing the geopolitics in the region, is the United States now in a weaker position?
Well, I would like to just address something very quickly that was mentioned in the previous question, which is, what is it that has got the United States and Israel in such an inimical position to Iran? Mm-hmm. My position on this is that if Iran did not have a drop of oil, if Iran didn't have a square millimeter of natural gas, she would still be subject to the same kind of hostile and aggressive activities on the part of the United States and Israel, for the simple reason that Iran achieved in 1979 what no country in that region has been able to achieve, which is complete political and economic independence from the West. Okay, so in a region where Israel and the United States need to keep all of these Middle Eastern countries in a state, if they're not being ruled by puppet governments that are friendly to the United States and Israel, then you have societies that are very unstable and subject to all sorts of turmoil. This is what Israel and the United States have to have if they are going to maintain their hegemony in the region. So Iran being a stable country, Iran having achieved its independence in 1979, and Iran being in the position of deciding what is in her own best interest, both in terms of her domestic policy and her long-range foreign policy objectives, this is what threatens the United States and Israel more than anything else, is that Iran is going to eventually become like a rallying point for all of these countries in the Middle East. And, of course, Iran having favorable relations with Russia, having favorable relations with China, this only adds to the situation in that Iran acts as something of a magnetic north for all of these other countries. So you can imagine the nightmare that the United States and Israel are looking at in terms of all of these other countries that have been under the U.S. sphere of influence now for the last half century. All of these countries falling out of that sphere of influence and instead kind of forming a confederacy, a political confederacy with Iran that is backed up by the military and the economic might of Russia and China. So I think that this best explains, I'm not going to say that the oil and the natural resources do not play a part in this, but I think more than anything else, it is the psychological power that Iran has in that part of the world that makes her such a threat to America and Israel's long-term foreign policy.
Well, thank you very much. I'd like to put that point to Peter Rushton as well. Mr. Rushton, the issue of independent decision-making, how strong of a factor do you think that is? And does that mean that the United States is after regime change in Iran, is after fueling dissent for that special reason?
Yes, I think it's not so much the threat of nuclear weapons as the threat of a positive example, the threat of a positive political example of successful resistance to Zionism and to the New World Order. When a revolution that challenges that Zionist order can survive and prosper for more than three decades, this obviously causes a problem for the decision makers in Washington and Tel Aviv. I think the chink of light, the hope that we can look for as well at the moment, amid all these causes for concern of the warlike rhetoric in the USA, the chink of light is very much, for example, the Ron Paul campaign at the moment, the Ron Paul presidential campaign. Because in previous years, politicians who stood out against Zionism, against the Zionist lobby, were marginalised and crushed. Ron Paul can't be marginalised and crushed. He's been polling, he's not going to win the nomination, but he's been polling very well in the Republican primaries. He's stacking up delegates. And just imagine a situation where the policymakers in the Pentagon and the policymakers in Tel Aviv were wanting to push towards war later this year.
Right, Mr. Rushton, if I could just stop you there.
Block
I'm
of delegates.
Sorry. I'm really sorry for jumping in, but we're running out of time. I'd just like to give the last comments to our guest in Madison. Professor Fetzer, as your concluding remarks, and briefly if you can, what do you think this is going to lead to? Do you think that, considering its situation, the U.S. may be convinced to engage in a win-win situation, at least in the case of Iran?
Well, an attack on Iran by Israel or the United States would be one of the great atrocities of human history, and it would be a blot on the reputation of the United States that it could never, never shake. We have discovered, by the way, that elections in the United States, including in Ohio in 2004, were manipulated by the government, which are supposed to not be made public because they use techniques that are used by the CIA to destabilize and steal elections in other countries. The ramifications here are enormous. Obviously, the CIA is manipulating elections right in the United States, right, and is denying those who are exposing it the right to speak the truth. Ron Paul is a great candidate, and I agree with the previous comments.
Thank you very much. Professor James Fetzer joining us there live from Madison, American philosopher. A big thank you as well to Peter Rushton, historian and political commentator in London, and Mark Glenn joining us via Skype from Idaho with the Crescent and Cross Solidarity Movement. Thank you very much. Thank you to all of our guests and you viewers for staying with us. From me, Homa Lesgi, and the rest of the team, it's goodbye for now.